Live from the palatial yet not overly ostentatious studios of CBS Sports Radio here in beautiful New York City, sitting on top of the 10th floor of 345 Hudson Street. Welcome on in to a Wednesday edition of the Zach Gelb Show, but where else? Right here on CBS Sports Radio, across all of our great local CBS Sports Radio affiliates, Sirius XM, Channel 158, and that free Odyssey app. 855-212-4CBS is number to jump on in. 855-212-4227. You can always get at me on Instagram, where I'm straight flexing, or via the good old cesspool of Twitter, at Zach Gelb. That's Z-A-C-H-G-E-L-B. Coming up, hour 20 from now, RJ Choppy from The Fan in Dallas is going to stop by, as we will do a little first and goal, Dallas Cowboys style. And then coming up at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, we will go back into the well of first and goal, and we will preview the Houston Texans today with a man that's been in the NFL since 2015, and now he calls the city of Houston home, and that, of course, is Denzel Perryman. But first up, producing this fine extravaganza is no other than Hot Take Hickey.
I don't know about that Hot Take Hickey.
So I got to start off with some college football and the future landscape of what college football is actually going to look like. You could come up with a guess or an idea, and your guess on this one is as good as mine, because I don't think there is a right way right now, or even anyone having an understanding of what the future of college football is going to look like. So my magic number is 3, where I really do believe we're going to go from the 5 Power 5 conferences down to 3, and there's going to be some other moving pieces. I just want to say that right out of the gate. We'll get back to that in just a second. But you look at the way that college football has changed, and this is nothing new, where for years we've had teams leave conferences that doesn't make sense from a geography standpoint, and it gets rid of old rivalries and traditions, but everyone follows the money. And right now, the Big Ten has the money, the SEC has the money, and also to their credit, the Big 12 has done a really nice job in getting money and looking like a conference that, for I don't know how long, is going to be able to survive, but they're not on life support like the Pac-12 is. And we've seen it in the last few years. Texas and Oklahoma bolt, and they're about to bolt the Big 12 to go to the SEC. And then out of nowhere, right, USC and UCLA going to the Big 10. Just as of last week, out of nowhere, Colorado, they're going to go jump into the Big 12. And the Big 12 had to kind of figure out how they were going to replace Texas and Oklahoma. And you're never going to replace Texas and Oklahoma with those brands. But they did a nice job in plucking from the American Athletic Conference and bringing in UCF, Cincinnati, Houston, and then also getting BYU, which has been a pretty good program under Kalani Sitake. And there's history with a lot of players, a lot of quarterbacks getting into the NFL from BYU. So with all those moving pieces, we wonder who's going to survive, who's going to be the haves, and who's going to be the have-nots. And I really do believe that the little guy gets forgotten about in this conversation. Everyone outside of the Power Five, and some of those schools that were outside the Power Five got elevated into the Power Five. But the little guy is going to be the last one to find out where their place is in this sport. But when you look at the quote-unquote major conferences and the power conferences, I don't see how the Pac-12 is going to survive, where you have that TV deal that was talked about with Apple based off subscriptions. And it's almost as if the Pac-12 just waited and waited and waited, thought that their brand, which wasn't even a great brand to begin with, was going to win out. And now all of a sudden they're trying to make a last-ditch effort to save the conference. All those teams, once a school like Colorado, which I know had tradition years and years ago, but the football program has been dreadful ever since going to the Pac-12. If a school like Colorado, even with Deion Sanders, and I know that there's energy now back with that football program, can make the astute move and just jump and do what's in the best interest of themselves, that needs to be, and that message needs to resonate with the other Pac-12 teams. Where it shouldn't be, let's save the conference, let's try to put lipstick on a pig. The Big 12, they already saved their conference. So for the Pac-12, I don't think it's realistic now when you've already seen the Big 12 get the have-nots that were at the upper echelon of that category and then that upper level. They already got those guys. So what are you going to really do to make your conference attractive and prevent those schools, those other schools that stay, from eventually leaving and getting their piece of the pie later? And you're already starting to see it where in the Big Ten, they're exploring adding more schools, right? They're looking at maybe Washington, Oregon, Cal, Stanford. Those are the schools that were thrown out today. You hear rumors about Arizona going to the Big 12, and maybe they want to bring Arizona State and Utah with them. The ACC, which I feel like we never talk about the ACC in terms of their future moving forward, because you expect a lot of those big brands in the ACC to eventually leave, but they have that affiliation with Notre Dame. Notre Dame never become a full-time member in football. Notre Dame's an enormous domino, but the TV money is just not that rich in the ACC, clearly compared to the Big Ten or the SEC. It pales in comparison. And Florida State basically comes out today and goes, there's not really much that the ACC could do, maybe besides like one or two things, but it's not a matter of really if we're leaving. It's a matter of just like when and where are we leaving. So there's going to be many more dominoes to fall here. And eventually through time, maybe it will just turn into the Big Ten and the SEC. And if you get left out of that, you're just in the have-not club. But I keep on going back to that magic number of three, because there still needs to be a space for the people that aren't at the popular kids' table. And the Big Ten is in a great spot. The Big Ten, they found a way to go get USC, UCLA, and build off already what is a really good conference and a lucrative conference. The SEC, they didn't need to add anyone for football. And you go get two enormous brands in Texas and Oklahoma. So those conferences, it just comes down to, here's the other part of the conversation. How many of those conferences in the SEC and the Big Ten are going to want to add, and what's the number going to be? Because it's not as if, like, for example, I think it was like 55, 56, almost 60 million each school in the Big Ten got last year for TV. It's not as if CBS is just going to be like, oh, yeah, keep on adding schools. We'll keep on giving you all those schools that number if you add like four, five, or six more. So that cost for those schools, unless it's a really attractive brand, they're not going to be wanted by these conferences. And you can make the case, right? If you go get Notre Dame, you absolutely bend over backwards to go get Notre Dame. There's been positive things and negative things said about Oregon and Washington, but I do think, right, those two schools, bare minimum for the Pac-12, are attractive when you're looking to see who you're going to add in. But that's a big part of this conversation that's not really talked about. What's going to be the cap? What's going to be the limit in the Big Ten and the SEC mind? Because in those minds, that's the popular table. That's the club that you want to be in. And we know the Big Ten's not going anywhere. We know the SEC is not going anywhere for the foreseeable future. It's what happens between the Big 12, the ACC, and the Pac-12 schools. And I do believe, through time, you will eventually, and you've already started to see it, right, with two schools joining the Big 10, and now you have Colorado jumping to the front line to leave and going to Big 12, striking when iron is hot. And you're looking at all the other schools. I'm not waiting. You already waited too long. So go make a move now and leave. And I do think the Power Five is getting very close to being the Power Four. But eventually, it's going to turn into the Big Ten, the SEC, and then it feels like whoever remains from the Pac-12, the ACC, and the Big 12 are eventually going to have to merge together. But you could say, well, the Big 12's done a nice job, and they're making a ton of money, maybe it then goes to four. And maybe it stays at four from five and doesn't go to three. So there's no right answer here. And Hickey, we've now talked about this for so many years, and I know you believe that it's going to go to just one big conference. and it's going to be 65, 70 schools, whoever, everyone branches off, and everybody else, you're SOL, and you got to be on your own. So I'm not saying that that's definitely wrong, right? And you guys know me. When Hickey says something, I'm never afraid to tell Hickey I think he's definitely going to be wrong. But I don't think there's a right answer. But when you just determine the Power Five, I really do believe we're shifting to Big Ten, SEC, and then eventually Pac-12, ACC, Big 12, through time, whoever remains going to kind of come together, and it's going to turn into the Power Three in college football. And for everybody else, much doesn't really change, because right now, college football, even though it's technically under one umbrella, we know that we view those teams as it's the Power Five, and then it's everybody else in the sport. Look how long with the college football playoff and how everything had to go Cincinnati's way, right, for Cincinnati to get in, where they need to take care of business on the field. But one little blemish on the resume, they would be out. When we've seen in other years, like remember UCF, who was trying to claim a national championship and things like that. So the sport for a while has really been the Power Five and then everybody else. That Power Five, I don't want to say they're turning on one another, but people are going where the money is, and you're going to lose the Pac-12 because of it, and you got to figure out what you're going to truncate to. And I really do believe that if I had to take my best educated guess, right, if you want to go back to school, like your best hypothesis, what's going to happen here, Zach, that it's going to be the Power Three moving forward. So a lot of dominoes still to fall, and nothing official yet, right? Like the Big Ten's just exploring more teams and looking at Washington, Oregon, Cal, Stanford. It feels like if depending on what you read, Arizona, right, contemplating going to the Big 12, but maybe they want to bring Arizona State and Utah with them. FSU with Florida State, it looks like that they're going to leave, but is there anything the ACC can do? So you have a bunch of things that are the wheels spinning in motion. It's just who's going to get off the wheel and go land permanently somewhere else. And still the biggest domino to fall is, will Notre Dame ever join a conference on a full-time basis and go away from their affiliation with the ACC, but more so their independent status. So, Hickey, I know you're Mr. College Football. There are new things to this conversation. Nothing set in stone, but how do you react to really all the chaos and everything that's been coming down the last 24 to 48 hours?
My biggest reaction is this. This entire realignment process has been by far the worst thing to ever happen in college football.
Why?
This is terrible. This is not what college football is supposed to be. I don't think, and I don't really see how two or three power conferences in 10 years from now, 20 years from now, how that's a benefit to schools in that conference, outside that conference. It is one big money grab. That's all this is.
Yeah.
Schools are leaving conferences, going to the others, only to get as much money as they possibly can. And I, for me, don't think that's good for college football whatsoever, because now you're losing, right? You basically are losing everything in which college football has separated themselves from the NFL. And every reason why most people fall in love with college football, a lot of those reasons are being thrown out to go get a paycheck.
So you're not wrong, and we know football drives the train, but I'm going to use basketball here for a second. Remember how great the Big East was, right? Even when we were growing up, and then even before we were growing up. The Big East is iconic. And the Big East had so many schools leave, and right, geographically it doesn't make sense, and people thought the Big East was done and over. And then there was that second wave of the Big East. And really, the Big East has thrived in this second era of success. Now, it helps when Villanova, for a while, was like winning a national championship every other year. But we've seen before things don't make sense from a geographic standpoint. Things don't make sense in terms of you're leaving a conference that had such great tradition. And college basketball, even though the regular season product is not in a great spot, but I don't know if it was ever, well, it was used to be in a great spot, but you now have one and dones and things along those natures. But for college basketball, each and every year we all get pumped up for March Madness. So even with all that change, each and every year, everyone is just talking about your bracket, March Madness, and it's still one of the best things on the sports calendar. For college football, even though a lot of these changes, yeah, they annoy you, and geographically, it doesn't make sense. And right, for example, you're going to have Bedlam now go away, which just absolutely stinks. But you go back at it, when the college football regular season rolls around, even if you don't like that they're going to two conferences or three conferences or whatever it ends up being, we're all still addicted to the sport of college football, and it's still going to find a way to work, even if I do agree with you at times, it does seem like it's stupid and it's just all driven by money.
I mean, I think it works if we do the breakaway model and you sell it like the NFL sells it. The NFL doesn't sell their TV revenue or their TV package based on division. They don't sell the AFC South to CBS and the NFC West to Fox. They sell the NFL. You buy the league. If you separate, and again, I'm open to whatever many teams you want to put in there, but if you sell this breakaway league of 70 schools and you sell it as you're buying college football, ESPN, Fox, CBS, at least now what you're doing is giving every single team an equal TV revenue check. So at least you could, everyone in theory,
okay,
can start on the same level. And then from there, NIL is all different. Resources, donations, obviously that's based on school and that's fine. That's, you have a bigger alumni base, you have fans that want to give, so be it. That's good for you. That's your advantage. But right now, having $30 million in terms of the gap between what the Big Ten is going to be getting versus what the Big 12 is going to be getting, that's not sustainable going forward. And that's not sustainable for even just the joy of college football, because it's going to be so big of and so wide of a gap. We're going to have 40 schools that are the haves, 100 and whatever the have-nots. I think that's bad for the sport.
But the only thing that I'm trying to wrap my head around here, and I'm not saying that you're totally wrong, I'm just asking a question. Isn't that kind of what it is right now in the structure of the Power Five and then everybody else, where you have schools that get paid this ridiculous amount of money that are quote-unquote cupcake schools to just go play another team, and then here and there they always have an upset? Like, if you go to just 65 schools and you make it just one league, what do you do with all the other teams? Like, do they just fade? Do they still have a rival league or something like that? Because remember, this is still under the umbrella of universities, and I know there's not a moral standard a lot of time, but in theory, they're supposed to be. Right, these are educational universities first. Now, a lot of times people look past that stuff in order to do what's in the best interest of the brand and the best interest of money. But I'm just trying to figure out then what happens to everybody else in this.
Well, nothing. It's basically, if you want to break away the Power Five and everyone else, then nothing changes with everyone else. The Group of Five, that's the same. But the TV deals aren't going to change.
Why would the Big Ten and the SEC, who are both thriving right now, why are they going to come together and operate as one?
Because going forward, if they don't want to expand, again, I just don't see how this is tenable for even them long term.
Why not?
If you're going to put 25 schools in your each conference, is that really what you want to go for going forward? I don't think so.
But is that number going to get up to that high? Because once again,
well, why not? Because
these schools right now, they may be selective on how many future teams they're going to add. Like, the brand of USC makes sense for the Big Ten to add. The SEC, adding Texas and Oklahoma, there's no downfall because you have these passionate, crazy, awesome, lucrative fan bases. For me, the more teams you add, the TV companies are eventually going to just stop paying every team that money, and they're going to say those schools are going to have to take less money and divide it out evenly. So when I look at that and I go through that, that's the part of the conversation that I think a lot of people just expect, oh, the SEC will gobble up everyone. Oh, the Big Ten will gobble up everyone. Now, in certain places, like Rutgers going to the Big Ten. Rutgers wasn't brought in the Big Ten for their football success. They wanted to tap into the New York, New Jersey market. But you look at the Big Ten and the SEC, I don't think they're going to gobble up as many teams as we actually think. Where, like you say, 25, 26 schools in each conference.
Well, they're at 16 right now.
Yeah.
If they add, potentially, this is, again, a rumor and a thought, but if they add Oregon, Washington, Cal, and Stanford, we're at 20. Florida State and Clemson shake free.
Do you think they're really going to add four schools? I think if they're going to add anybody, it's going to be, I'm talking the Big Ten, Washington and just Oregon. I don't think Cal and Stanford, even though they're exploring them, are going to wind up in the Big Ten.
I mean, I would agree in the sense I think those are way more attractive in terms of TV deals and partnerships and bringing big fan bases. But Cal and Stanford are two academic strong suits, and the Big Ten does, for how corny it is, they do care about academics. If you want to add that to your roster, quote-unquote, I think they would do it. If Florida State and Clemson, let's say, prefer the Big Ten over the SEC, just throwing it out there, Like, all of a sudden, now you're at 22. Like, it's really, like, both sides. Like, the SEC and the Big Ten right now are going to be at 16 teams starting next year.
Yeah.
It's really not that far of a climb to get to 20 each. And then basically you're gobbling up, at that point, two-thirds of the Power Five already just right there.
But once
40
you,
out of 65.
But here's the thing. Once you get to 20, after that, who are going to really be the teams that are attractive? Like, there's a few schools in the ACC that could be attractive. Notre Dame is obviously the one, the biggest domino still to fall. If you want to tell me Washington and Oregon, sure, absolutely, I'll listen to that. But really, outside of that, if you're talking about, and I think the Big 12 is different compared to the SEC and the Big 10, the Big 12 is just looking to survive, and they did that. For the Big 10, the SEC, I still think there's going to be a standard where you're going to have to do something and be attractive for the conference, where I don't think just because they get to 20, then they're going to say, oh, let's get the number up to 30, and you add a bunch of schools that, like, the Big 12 was adding that were attractive for the Big 12 but wouldn't be attractive to the Big 10 and the SEC. The standard's going to be higher in the Big 10 and the SEC, as it should be.
You would think, but also this is kind of a unprecedented, uncharted waters where stuff does not make sense. And again, I don't really know the motivations outside of money. It does make sense in the sense that only Oregon, only Washington can be selective who you bring in. But as conferences continue to dwindle, and maybe you view strength in numbers as a positive on your side, so maybe having 24 compared to a 20 in the SEC, let's say if you're the Big Ten, that boosts your quote-unquote profile. Maybe that's why they would add more teams that are a little less desirable, we'll say.
So I really do believe that there's going to be changes, but it's not going to be as crazy as what we think it's going to be. You always have the have-nots. That's people that aren't in the Power Five. The Pac-12 is going to fold. And then I would say within 5 to 10 years, you will see whoever remains in the ACC and then whatever team doesn't get brought over from the Pac-12 is going to merge with the Big 12, and that will be your three power conferences, if you want to say, of the power schools that are out there, Big 10, SEC, and whatever new name or whatever brand ends up prevailing between the Big 12, the ACC, and at this point, you could already forget about the Pac-12. It is the Zach Yelp Show on CBS Sports Radio. What do you think the future of college football is going to look like? Do you think we're going just one 65-league conference and it's going to be a new brand, a new entity? Do you think we're going to three like I am? How about four? Do you think the Pac-12 could actually survive? That's what's on the table for you right out of the gate. 855-212-4CBS. It's 855-212-4227. And this is the Zach Gelb Show.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
So a major sports gambling scandal in Iowa with Iowa players, Iowa State players. We're getting more details about that. There's a current Broncos player who was involved in it, who played at Iowa State. The guy that was supposed to be the starting quarterback for Iowa State this year and was their starting quarterback last year is involved in this. And you continue to move forward once you get past Hunter Decker's Decker, the quarterback for Iowa State. You have a kicker for Iowa, a wrestler for Iowa State, a baseball player for Iowa. There was an offensive lineman, too. Hickey, this is a major, major, major scandal, and most of the people that are, you know, being investigated or a part of this scandal, they were using, like, their parents' information and creating an account under their parents' name because they weren't of age to gamble, quote-unquote, legally here, and they still wanted to get their gambling fix in. But the Iowa State quarterback, probably the name Hunter Decker, just because he's supposed to be the starting quarterback this year, starting quarterback last year, that's been a one that's resonated a lot. He placed 366 wagers for $2,799. We also, in this, there was one game that was talked about. It was back in 2021 up against Oklahoma State. Now, he wasn't playing in the game, but it was a game that an Iowa State player was betting on. And you go into this Broncos defensive lineman, and he could face up to 2 years in prison for allegedly betting on Broncos and Iowa State games, according to the complaint that was filed Tuesday in The Athletic via Dove Kleiman. And the defensive line for the Broncos, he placed 32 bets on the Broncos players and games last year during his rookie season. And he's already been suspended by the NFL, as we know. And he's accused of knowingly and intentionally falsifying personal electronic sports wagering records by concealing his personal identity. So this is, for college sports and the NFL, really their worst nightmare, because the integrity of the game gets called into question. Now, we don't know every game that they were betting on and what side did they bet on, and were they betting in support of their team or against their team and so on and so on. But this gets talked about a lot. And let me just circle one little argument here. A lot of people go, well, you look at the NFL, right? You watch a game on a Sunday now, all advertisements for gambling. Heck, you listen to our network and local affiliates, all advertising for gambling. They're throwing gambling right in front of you. So the NFL could go make a fortune off gambling, but then players can't do it. And it's like amazing to me how people can't understand that. There's jobs, or there are rules in every company at jobs that aren't illegal, that you may not agree with, but you got to follow the rules. And if you're in college and you're a college athlete, you can't bet. If you're an NFL player, you can't bet on the NFL, or you can't place bets on other sports at a NFL facility. And yes, the NFL may make a lot of money, and they do make a lot of money off gambling. But for the NFL, it's about protecting the integrity of the game. We're sure. They go get into bed with all these gambling companies and make a fortune, and they could benefit off Hot Take Kiki and I and Ack, whoever, on a Sunday that sit down and gamble on football. And trust me, the NFL is not going after the three of us because we don't bet enough money, or don't think any of us bet enough money. But they go after, right, the big-time gamblers, and right, everyone's going to do it each and every Sunday and spend ridiculous amount of money because there's a lot of money to go get made. But for players, the last thing you could do is gamble, because even if you're betting in support of your team, there's always going to be, is there going to be an offensive lineman? Is there going to be a cornerback? Or is there going to be a quarterback that lines up and goes, you know what? I'm not making a lot of money right now. Someone just offered to pay me this ridiculous King Ransom amount of money, and I could go out there and I could throw the game, or I can miss a tackle, and I could go benefit on this team going to cover for the other way, and I'll go make a ton of money. So that's why, and it's crazy to me how fans don't get this. We're sure it's hypocritical. There's a lot of things that go on hypocritical. But in every job, there's rules. You may not agree with the rules, but when it comes to gambling, yeah, I could go gamble on a football game. Hickey could go gamble on a football game. And we talk about it a ton, right? Gambling's a part of this show. The NFL is a part of this show. But once you have the players starting to gamble, that's when it gets called into question. And you may not like it, but those are the rules here, Hickey.
And that's why now you're starting to see also an alarming trend where last year the only player to get in trouble was Calvin Ridley.
Yeah.
And Calvin Ridley was away from the team and betting the Falcons at a parlay in a game he was not playing in. And for whatever reason, even that year-long suspension handed out by the NFL did not resonate with a lot of players, because now we see, what is it, 13 or 14 players in the NFL this offseason get in trouble for gambling. And now you're starting to see, whether it's in the NFL or college, players gambling now on games they are playing in. Now, we don't so far know of any fixes that are in or any sort of funny business, but it takes one game and one player to truly alter a fan's perception of, is this game rigged? And if you think a game is rigged or in question, you're not going to gamble on it, and that's going to be money lost from the sports books, which means it's going to be money lost from the league because they're not going to get money from the sports books. And all of a sudden now it's going to rapidly decline the money funnel that they're getting, which is why you're starting to see harsh penalties from the NFL one-year suspension. And if you see the NCAA suspension, by the way, what they're going to levy, you lose permanent eligibility. Your career's over. Right? If you are a college athlete and you have no college eligibility, you are done. And so you thought the NFL was bad. These college kids are getting in trouble right now at Iowa, Iowa State, and a few other schools as well. Their careers are over.
Here's the other part of this, too. I'm not surprised that it's happened in the NFL. I'm surprised how many names it's happened with at this time in the NFL. In college, it does not surprise me one bit. Now, I'm not expecting the starting quarterback of Iowa State to do it, but you look at a college football roster, and I know, right, there's a wrestler here who was totaling $45,640 in bets, which I know NIL is now a thing, but where are these guys getting the money to to place these amount of bets. And I'm someone that gambled in college, right? Like I was in a fraternity. We gambled like 20, 25 bucks. We had one guy be the bookie. Oh, maybe I shouldn't go into all these details, but hey, whatever. And right, you would gamble. And that was just in a fraternity house and right, people in college trying things and wanted to talk about sports really. But when it comes to college athletes, like you look at a college football roster with over 100 players on it, when you have a third string or a fourth string player or some guy that never sees the field, it doesn't shock me if that guy's betting. Now, I'm surprised when it's a starting quarterback at Iowa State, but when you have college kids do dumb things. I've done dumb things in college. I'm sure, Hickey, you've done dumb things in college. And there's a feeling of freedom and no one will ever catch me. And okay, I could create this account. My parents, right, you get their information and it will never come to light, but it's always going to come to light here. You can't hide anything anymore. So it doesn't surprise me that it's going on in college. Now, you look around, right, you got people involved in the basketball program, the football program, wrestling as well. That doesn't surprise me, but I'm more surprised in the NFL. I know a lot of the time it's with younger players too, so not that far removed from college. But for the NFL, I'm surprised by how many suspensions we've already had in the NFL just because the players are doing it. Like, yeah, once they do it, you got to go suspend them. You won't hear a peep from me on that. But I don't want to say shocked, but mildly surprised that it's been this many numbers in the NFL.
Especially when, again, you had a basically sacrificial lamb in Calvin Ridley. He was the only person, a pretty well-known name, or it's not like some scrub 53rd man on the roster that no one's ever heard of. Okay, fine, that's never going to happen to me. This is a well-known guy in the league that was suspended a full year. And why all of a sudden now, again, this is multiplied times 13 or 14 players right now. They didn't learn the lesson. It is mind-blowing.
If you were trying to rig a game, what's the best position in college football to go rig a game?
Corner.
You do.
Fall down, receiver goes deep, touchdown. I would say that's probably the easiest one.
I would say kicker. Because there's a lot of bad kickers in college football. So if you just miss a few kicks here and there, right, worth 3 points, 1 point, whatever it is, it may not be that noticeable. But you did have that Iowa kicker, Aaron Blum, who's accused of placing 170 different bets totaling $4,400 before his 12th birthday. Act best position if you were going to be an athlete that wanted to rig a game and throw a game, what do you think the best position would be?
Quarterback.
Quarterback?
Yeah.
Yeah, you touch the ball the most. I feel like it's tough, though, to hide it with the quarterback.
You never know. I was at a game that they shaved points at.
Oh, were you really?
Yeah, basketball, Northwestern.
Ah. Oh, that's right. When you first started working in Chicago, right?
Yep.
How about that? What do you remember about that, looking back all these years
later? I just remember one of the...
Were you in on it?
Was I in on it? No.
Yeah, you know, you get some good inside information.
I see Ack being in on it.
Yeah.
Bribing a 21-year-old kid. Here's $100. Missed two free throws at the end of the game.
I do remember.
Hey, Chief, what's the inside scoop?
One of the players that was implicated in that one had the reputation of being inconsistent. And I'm looking at this game, and I'm like, I don't know what's wrong with this kid. I mean, it was... I didn't think it was shaving points, but I was like, I don't know what
something's not clicking.
Yeah. It's like, get him out. You know, but he was one of their best players. So and it was like, this is a bad comparison maybe, but he had that like John Starks like quality that if you got him going, he could really get going and lift the team. And I guess maybe that was one reason why they stuck with him in this particular game, because you know, all it took was one shot and boom, you know, they would be off and running, but it didn't happen.
Now, this is the thing I'm going to least look forward to this NFL season. With how many players have been suspended in the NFL, and even college now, especially with this Iowa State scandal, you know, social media, anytime you lose a bet this year, they're going to go back and they're going to see in the third quarter this guy just magically fall down. They're going to be like, oh, was he betting on the game? Was he throwing the game? And we're going to get some stupid calls and some crazy conspiracy theories. But I'm sure there's people out there that right now that are going through these games, all Iowa State games, all that stuff. I know for the quarterback, right, in 2021 he wasn't playing, but they're going to go investigate and there's going to be some crazy videos that I'm sure will go viral in the next 24 to 48 hours. It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. The latest, what Jerry Jones is saying on Dak Prescott next.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. So, a tradition unlike any other, Jerry Jones saying things in training camp. Remember last year, he said, we go as Zeke goes. And everyone's like, what are you talking about? Everyone knew heading into last year that Ezekiel Elliott already declined and Tony Pollard was the best running back on the roster. And also, it doesn't make sense when you're paying the quarterback as much as you are in Dak Prescott in what last year was the year of 2022 to have an offense go as a running back goes. So that was something last year I'm like, what the heck is he talking about? And I don't think he was doing his quarterback any favors. Now, today, or maybe this was yesterday, it was on the ticket in Dallas. This is Jerry Jones making his latest declaration about the offense and also Dak Prescott.
It's Dak friendly. The offensive line is going to be able to protect him better. Their spacing is narrower, which is conducive to protection. He's going to have more opportunity to dump the ball off to the backs. He's going to have less to do before the snap and less to read after the snap. Receivers are going to be less dependent upon reading the D-back and Dak reading the D-back, and it's going to be more about being at a spot where they should be. The combine of all of it, and all of it is adjustments, not dramatic changes, but are adjustments. When you combine it all, then I'm confident that we're going to be excited about how it protects Dak and how it actually helps efficiency for Dak.
Hickey, when I hear that from Jerry Jones, and maybe I'm reading too much into it because sometimes Jerry Jones just says things and you kind of just got to roll your eyes and keep it moving and you know how the year is going to play out. It's almost as if they're putting floaties on Dak Prescott. Or if they were at a bowling alley, they would say, oh, let's put the bumpers up. That does not seem, even though you're trying to make it easier for your quarterback, it's almost as if you're saying, we want Dak to be a game manager and everyone else, right? The offensive line and the receivers and the play calling, it's going to ease everything up for Dak Prescott.
And that's directly putting extra pressure on Dak, where if he has another bad year, where's the excuse? Jerry just said in a minute and 3 seconds that it's Dak-centric, the running game's going to be better, the passing game's going to be easier. He literally said everything is going to be easier. And so if Dak Prescott has another okay season and another first-round exit in the playoffs, if you're Jerry Jones then, look, I don't know if he'll actually do it because, you know, he goes with his heart more than his head, but he is setting his quarterback up to fail. And I think those words he just said will come back to rue a lot in January if we're talking about another early Cowboys exit or, even crazier, if they miss the playoffs.
So I don't think they're going to miss the playoffs. Now, Dak, who has been injured, right, I think he would have to miss a big portion of the season for them to miss the playoffs in what is a weak NFC. You have a defense that's absolutely loaded. You got to think the offensive line will be better, assuming Zach Martin, they get that situation figured out and they don't trade him. You bring in Brandon Cooks as well. They should, bare minimum, have enough to win 9 games this year. But they're already talking about extending Dak Prescott, who's not a free agent until 2025. And if he's not on the roster next year, the dead cap is $61 million. I just keep on thinking, and I know there's been some changes, that the Cowboys are keep on going back with the main pieces in place. And I do believe Mike McCarthy will be the coach next year. I do believe Dak Prescott will be the coach next year. But it's going to be coming off another year where at times in the regular season, they look like it's all coming together and it's all humming and there's a lot of great synergy, which they've done the last 2 years. And they even impress you and even impress me from time to time in the regular season. But come postseason time, the defense will be ready to play. Offensively, though, I don't trust Dak Prescott. Even in NFC, where the only great quarterback right now is Jalen Hurts, I don't trust Dak Prescott to go on out and win multiple games in the playoffs. And bare minimum this year, the Dallas Cowboys have to get to an NFC title game. And it's not crazy to say that they could get to an NFC title game, but I don't see them going to a Super Bowl. And you could bet you know what? I'm not going to be betting that they're going to win a Super Bowl this year. But you are right where Jerry Jones basically just said they dumbed down the offense and they're taking everything off the plate of Dak Prescott. I know you can't take everything, but a lot of things off the plate of Dak Prescott. And if Dak plays the way that he did up against the Niners the last 2 years in the playoffs where the defense did everything they could to advance him to the next round, then yeah, I still think Dak will be back, but it's going to make me just feel even worse than I currently do about the quarterback position of the Dallas Cowboys. You just have a good quarterback, but not a very good quarterback, not a very, 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 very good quarterback, not even, you know, not a great quarterback, but you have a good quarterback. And there's only so far a good quarterback can take you in the league, and you could win with a good quarterback, sure. But if Dak can't win and get out of the NFC this year, when the NFC is really just the Eagles and the 49ers to the teams that are great, then he's never going to find the way to get the job done in Dallas, which would be getting back to a Super Bowl and winning a Super Bowl, which I haven't done since the 1995 season.